Do we have a quorum?
Yes, John, we do. I think we may have all nine.
Terrific.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Who are we missing?
Okay, well, this is a meeting, a special meeting of the Navigator Board taking place via teleconference pursuant to Executive Orders N2520 and N2920. The Board of Directors and employees of Navigator are meeting via Zoom. If the public wishes to attend the meeting, they have the information to join us and we'll have an opportunity to talk. Those comments will be limited to 3 minutes. If an interpreter is needed, comments will be translated in English and the time limit shall be extended to 6 minutes. At its discretion, the board may limit the total time allotted to public comments and set new time limits for individual comments. The board reserves the right to mute and remove a participant from the meeting if the participant is unreasonably disruptive. Requests for disability modifications are available and following the section of 202 of the ADA. So with that, we will call the meeting to order. And Sean, would you confirm attendance?
Chuck Daggs?
Here.
Dina Corin?
Here.
Fia Oman?
Here.
Ian Connell?
Here.
J.P. Anderson?
Present.
John Flaherty?
Here.
Nora Crivello?
Present.
Shar Hegde?
Here.
Victor Paredes-Colonia?
Present.
All directors are present.
Great, thank you. The meeting as a special meeting is done as a result of the developments, as we indicated a couple of years ago, these meetings would occur on a short notice possibility, depending upon the developments of the pandemic and how it affects Navigator, and specifically our students, their parents, and our Navigator team. That seems to be happening here at the end of July and beginning of August. And so we are going to talk about short-term independent study policies and long-term independent study policies. This came about, I wanted to include this on Chairman Dionne. By the way, quickly, Sean, do we have any public comments regarding non-agenda items?
We do not.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to skip over that. The meeting is occurring as a result, as I said, of the changing environment, and specifically the question of students, Navigator students returning, and whether or not an independent study program is needed. The staff, showing some fairly good initiative, put forth a very definite and very strong questionnaire to students as to whether or not under the current, what we'll call Delta environment, referring to the variant, whether or not they were planning on having their kids return to school. The expectation was there may be, given some of the comments and contacts of parents, and Kevin can fill in any gaps I leave, there was an expectation anywhere between 3 and a half a dozen parents may not want to have their kids return under the Delta variant environment. And in fact, we would then be confronted with, do we recommend or refer those, as we talked earlier, to another school in the public system, or do we offer an elementary or an independent study program that would be substandard, possibly, compared to the hybrid program the parents and the students were used to? The staff pressed parents that they had not heard from, and in fact, given the rise in the variant situation, more parents than we thought were saying that they were not expecting to send their children back right away. And that given the quick return we got and extrapolating from that, the numbers may be higher. I'll let Kevin go into that. So the board, or rather the staff, as is their custom, and as has been their performance in this whole pandemic process, pivoted to develop a short-term independent study policy that was, if not robust, certainly better than it had been, and also went for a long-term independent study policy, which I would describe as, rather than flipping a switch into hybrid, having sort of a knob that they can turn up as the situation goes one way or the other. So with that in mind, Kevin, I'll turn it over to you and then to Sharon to talk about these policies that have been sent to the board members. And again, I thought it would be wise, and again, thank you board members for the quick turnaround in attending, but I thought it would be important for the board to show their support to the staff and to present a sort of unified response to the parents and the students with respect to how we're approaching these latest developments. Very quickly, developments. Kevin will send over to you some talking points that the superintendent of Santa Clara County sent out that were very positive, very cheerleading about the students coming back to school and how important it is and all the good things that happened. Unfortunately, she doesn't raise the notion of the challenges that our staff meets, particularly ours in the demographics and areas that we have with respect to vaccination. So Santa Clara County, 84% vaccination, terrific. But our two other schools are in two other counties, and the areas that we are in Santa Clara County, 95020, not 84%. Students' masks really help with the variant. However, there are some studies, an Israeli study and a study here in the U.S., that say it's the N95 masks that are very helpful with the Delta. And then finally, the notion of the breakthroughs. People who have been vaccinated who get Delta, the good news is studies are showing that it's less than 1% of vaccinated individuals. The challenging news, of course, is that the students aren't vaccinated because they're under the age limit. Good news, the FDA is working hard on preparing a vaccine for children, and the expectation by some is that it will be at the end of the year, as early as the end of the year, maybe even earlier, November. Challenge, they're working on making sure that they keep the minimum of side effects, one or two of them quite serious with respect to that. So we're in sort of a changing environment that, as the staff knows, can change from every 2 or 3 days in terms of what we're faced with. So with that, Kevin, I wanted to make sure the board understood sort of what our thinking was in the past few weeks. And do you have anything that you'd like to say?
Sure. Thank you, John. Just first, thank you to all of our board members for making this time available. 100% attendance on a special meeting in the beginning of August. Just hats off to you. Thank you so much for your service and your dedication. I see Amy snapping. That's our recognition there. I think we all are experiencing some degree of COVID fatigue or pandemic fatigue. And we all in June just wanted this to be over and keep our kids back or have our kids back. And, you know, the hybrid gave us a taste of, you know, that experience with, you know, about 80% of our kids 3 hours a day or so. And we all saw how important it was to get our kids back on site. So in June, we were super optimistic, and we had literally one parent reach out about wanting distance learning or something other than the on-site instruction that we were planning. I know there was some hesitancy out there. We didn't get 100% of parents. They were there at that time that they were going to return, but only one really was asking for something different. And I think Dina at that time was like, what? Just one? Like, really? And we're like, yeah. But we know that the Delta variant has shaken people up. And, you know, particularly if you're watching national news and you're seeing what might be going on in Kentucky or Florida. And, you know, so we had the sense that more parents were developing some concern. We believe strongly that we're going to have very safe educational environments where we're going to be mitigating their risks to the extent possible. There's still a risk, right? And that risk is what we're afraid might drive more parent behaviors here. And because of that, we did this survey, as John mentioned, and Kirsten will give us the exact numbers. I think it was closer to ultimately around 5% of our families saying they're not ready to return. Kirsten, do you have those latest numbers?
I do. By site, we have 32 students at GPS, 39 students at HPS, and 7 students at WPS. We still have about 100 parents that the office said they're calling, but that was those are the numbers as of 6:08.
And Kirsten, what percentage of return of total parents is that, or total families?
We're roughly at about 80. Let's see, we have 200.
It's about 90%.
Yeah.
We're at about 90. Okay. Yeah.
Can you put those into percentages? You gave the quantity of
families. Yeah, I will. I will do that. I was working on that. I will get that. I'll put that in chat just a minute.
Yeah. Thank you, Kirsten. It's about 6% for GP and HP, and a lot less at WP. So when we had the early signs that these numbers were coming in, we had a leadership team meeting where we talked about the need to pivot. And Sharon Waller really took the lead as our director of student services in crafting the policies that we shared with the board, and working with Sharon, working with James and the academic team to develop some initial plans or sample plans of how we would deliver independent study. And so Sharon, I want you to chime in with anything else in just a minute. I just say that what we had when we were doing distance learning in the beginning is we had 100% of focus on distance learning. And then when we came back in hybrid, we still had a pretty good focus on distance learning for those distance learning students, because there was enough of them to be able to provide regular synchronous instruction with a teacher or a small group instructor for part of their day. What the state is requiring us to do right now is to, in order to meet our obligations as a public school, we are required to provide a full day on-site instruction for every student. And independent study is an option that parents can request. If you approve this policy, then we can provide that as an option, but we still need to provide 100% option for all students to return full day, which means that in order to provide a high quality independent study program, we're gonna have to shift some resources and some focus. No matter what we did, the quality is not going to compare to what we were providing before, when the students were in their regular, they were with their regular classroom teachers in a virtual environment that was focused on, the teachers were able to focus 100% on the students in that virtual environment. And so our regular teachers are going to be focusing on the majority of the students that are going to be in their classroom. So there's really no way that we're going to be able to provide those students the same teachers with that same level of focus. So we do want to, if the board approves this, as we communicate to parents about what their option might be, is that we want to be very realistic about what it is that we're going to be offering. And the independent study programs are typically, the lift is a little higher on the parents than compared to what we were doing in distance learning. While that there was still a lift on the parents, it's not in an independent study environment, we're not going to be providing the same amount of real-time instruction or face-to-face, not face-to-face, but online synchronous instruction. So I'm going to pause there and let Sharon or James fill in if anything important, relevant that I might have missed.
No, one huge important thing is too, I want to publicly shout out Sean. Sean was my partner in crime with crafting the policies and ensuring we had all the details in it. So Sean, thank you so much.
So John, at this point, if you'd like to just take questions or pepper us with questions, we're happy to share whatever we can.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. With the idea that Sharon is going to go through the short-term plan, and then we will vote on that, and the long-term plan, and then we will vote on that. Setting that aside, plans which had been sent to us, are there any questions having to do with the polls and the information that Kevin talked about, and just generally sort of that we may want to ask senior staff what's going on with the Delta variants in the parents?
Will we be speaking to these parents that are concerned? In other words, or have we already spoken to them and they've made it very, very clear that their children aren't going to come back initially?
Yes, it's a common, go ahead, Sharon.
Well, in the policy and actually in the state regs, we're required to do a conference with every parent that requests independent study. So I think at that time, similar to how Kevin explained pretty clearly that it's, not the same. We're doing our best, but yes. So I think that's why they put that into the policy.
Mm-hmm. I saw that, but I guess my question's more, given the circumstances, is this their initial response? We haven't spoken to them yet, correct? So we may change some minds as well. That's the only thing I'm thinking mm-hmm. about.
Yes, that is true. And just because as the office staff has been calling families who have not finished the survey yet, when the families say, is this like distance learning? When they say no, then they say, we're coming back. So to your point, yes,
numbers could get a little better. And then is there any incremental state funding based on the number of parents that opt out?
Amy, you wanna?
At this time, there's not specific to distance learning. We do have a few pots of money that we can use for this from the pandemic, but nothing specific at this moment that I am aware of.
Got it. Thanks.
John, we have hands raised from Dina and Shara.
Yeah. Dina?
I have two questions. One is, am I understanding it correctly that if a student decides, let's just play it to the extreme, right? If a student decides family decides to do this for the full year or for any portion of time, really, if we would, do you know how the LCFF revenue would flow? So if we do end up partnering with a district, do we pass off their ADA so the district would get their ADA or the county or whoever's doing the program would get their ADA and we would need to hold the spot for them. So if we backfilled, we might then, when they come back, be over enrolled. Is that correct?
Amy, it looked like you were nodding. Did you want to answer that one?
That is correct. Okay. We would be over enrolled, but I think that we are prepared for that also. The county or district would not get their ADA, and Kirsten, please interrupt if I'm incorrect. We would contract out. So they would still be our students as enrolled at Navigator Schools. However, we would contract with the county and pay them a certain amount for
that service. Like a non-public school, hopefully not the same price tag, but similar to the way we have relationships with non-public schools.
Is that correct, Kirsten?
Yeah, yes. So like Gilroy Unified would charge us an amount, Santa Cruz County would charge us an amount, we'd get the ADA and it would go to them, but no, not at the same price tag as a non-public school place.
And we would, okay, got it. Okay. And we would still, well, I guess in that case, it might be tricky to backfill their seat. So perhaps we wouldn't do that because we're still collecting their ADA. So our ADA would end up being inflated if we were serving them. Okay, got it. Next question is, do we have a tipping point? So if we end up having these students, like half of them backtrack, is there a point at which we would say, yeah, we're going to go ahead with the contract route because it's too few? Or if, you know, an extra 30 join because things get even worse, like, is that a definite, we're going to be providing additional staffing to support these students?
I'll say that, I mean, at this point, it seems pretty certain that we're gonna have enough students where it's gonna make the most sense for us to provide the program. But because we haven't gone through that whole process, we don't actually know. So if you were to, you know, as far as a specific number on the tipping point, I think it's more of a range as we get, you know, as we get closer. But we were looking at, like, if it were more than 30 students, that would be a lot to figure out placement outside, and it's going to make more sense for us to solve that problem. That's where we're leaning right now. And Kirsten mentioned we do have opportunities with two of the districts right now. We have not confirmed with Hollister School District yet whether they'll be able to accommodate any requests that we may have of them. So that'd be another factor there as well.
And would we consider taking on the students of other charters or other, do we have that opportunity? Do you know, like if we end up going that route, could we then be the vendor?
I think we're pretty stretched, Dina, trying to figure this out for current Navigator students. So I would have to say
no. Yeah. Okay. I wonder a little bit if there's like a sweet spot for providing the services between like 10 and 30, but contracting between 10 and 30, because below a certain number, it might actually be so easy to provide one-on-one services that it's easier for the teacher in sort of the old school independent study way. Of doing it so small. I don't know, just a thought. Yeah. I'm thinking about the numbers game a little bit, and like, where are the efficiencies?
The only problem, Dina, is that the old school independent study way is not an option for the long term.
Sure.
So the new laws required the daily synchronous for K-3 and other, I think it's twice a week for grades 4-6. And anyhow, so there is a different level of rigor with the new independent study requirements for the long term. So that does complicate it as well.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had Dina asked the question I was going to ask around the tipping point. But I also was just curious more broadly, are you having any concerns or challenges about students and families observing and following the safety protocols? And the question behind my question is really about masking and some of the controversies around it. If you watched the Santa Clara County Board meeting from, I think, about a week and a half ago, there is a growing contingent of mask choice folks. And I'm just wondering if you've encountered any of that and at the three different sites and how you're working through that.
We haven't yet. Anybody experience that care, Sam? Were you going to say something?
We had one, I think one or two parents when they filled out the initial survey in the summer saying, we don't want our kids to wear masks all day, but we have not had what our host counties have been experiencing.
A good question. Shar, do you have, one development I heard today is that county leadership, or I'm sorry, yeah, county leadership of the various Bay Area counties today reinstituted wearing masks indoors, requirement. So it seems to be trending toward encouraging mask wearing, and that's even of vaccinated people, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think there's the most people, I think, are generally on the same page about this. Yeah. But I'm naming this because I obviously don't want school staff to get blindsided by it. And seeing and watching that county board meeting, I know I don't experience that with our demographics at Alpha. And I know there's a lot of other networks that probably aren't experiencing that because people do feel a genuine commitment to safety and doing what they can to be a part of the solution here. Yeah. But I do see this like bubbling up in like different places and just want to make sure it was brought up and we talk about it. So.
Other questions, comments? Okay, with that, let's move to the next section, which is the short-term plan. And Sharon, do you want to give some remarks about this? And then answer questions, take comments.
Yeah, I'd be interested if someone has, if everybody's read it, the short-term policy, just in a nutshell, is what we traditionally do when students go away, either on vacation. Some of our migrant students typically fall under that category, and it's more of a packet-based system. And now the stipulation is that it's 15 days or less. Versus in the past, we could have extended it longer, and we still can if there's you have a meeting with parents. But typically, the traditional independent study is 15 days or less. So that's and it does not have the levels of accountability Kevin referred to, the synchronous learning time, asynchronous learning time. It doesn't stipulate those kind of things at all. So it's pretty basic.
And that's essentially 3 weeks of independent study.
So yeah, John, we've had this type of policy in place. The board approved it through approving our charters at some point. And you know, since our first year, we've been practicing it. And with the new requirements, as Sharon mentioned, we now have to restrict that to 15 days. That's a major change from our previous policy or existing policy on independent study.
Okay. How's that worked in the past? Have we found that students fall behind a certain amount, or there's really no real short-term impact?
We haven't noticed really any, I don't believe, any short-term impact from the majority of students that go out on the independent study.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not used very, very often.
Not for that length of time. I would say our common would be, say, someone's gone for 5 days. So we haven't really had people go even up to 3 weeks to 15 days very often ever.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
It looks like Dina has a question too, John.
Dina.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if this is what we'll be using for students if they have an exposure. Like, how does the how does that impact things, or would they be rolled into the long term? Because we want to try to keep some. I guess I'll just leave it there. What's the plan for?
Well, that's a really good. Yeah. So depending on if there was an exposure, they would fall under probably the short term independent study if they are. You know, within 10 days, they're symptom free, or whatever the length of time the symptom free time is, they can come back to school. So, yeah. And then if it ended up looking like they were going to be not doing well for whatever reason, then I think certainly we could move them into the more long-term comprehensive independent study.
I guess, Sharon, we could also look and see, like, depending on how, assuming the board approves the independent study longer term, mm-hmm. and we're doing it, we could see how, you know, based on how it's operating, it yeah. might be a little more robust for those students. Hopefully we don't have that situation, Dina, but thank you for the great question. Help us prepare for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's inevitably going to be exposures, right? So, mm-hmm. Great. Okay, thank you.
Any more questions or comments about the short-term independent study program?
Could someone speak to what the burden is on teachers to make this happen? Is it an IS instructor that's putting together all the work? Is it on the homeroom teachers? I'm curious what the burden is to our homeroom teachers.
For a short-term independent study?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, the teachers typically do it, put together the packets, and sometimes the principals help if the teachers are busy, help. Different people might assist to put different parts of the packet together, but mostly it's the teacher assigning work.
So to Dina's point on exposure, it's probably gonna happen where teachers are doing this every week for different people for different stretches of time for another couple months.
Possibly, and if it did become a lot of students, I promise many hands will step in to help put together things for students. Because we definitely want the teachers to stay focused on the most important work of all with their students in the classroom.
I would say, I mean, I think independent study has always been a terrible burden on teachers to have to navigate all these unique situations. And some schools don't even have policies because they just aren't willing to take on that complexity given the small amount of ADA that they would lose with the short-term independent study. So I would say, like, depending on how things go in the first month or two, you might choose that exposure, like, to navigate students to, like, the long-term option instead of the short-term, or make a school policy that says, like, you know, if it is an exposure case, we want to roll you into the long-term, because it's more similar to the in-person, or I don't know. I don't know if that's even possible given if we are to approve these policies as is. I just agree on the teacher burden that mm-hmm. traditional independent study is taxing. I mean, maybe long-term independent study is going to be taxing too. It's just taxing all around, and we have no way to avoid that. But yeah. I do worry about that too.
Dina, I'd say that if with the board approving the policy, we wrote it so that we would have staff with some flexibility on the procedure. So board's approving the policy, staff can modify procedures and the more tactical detailed plans to deliver, whether it's short-term and longer-term. And we need to be nimble and to be able to kind of adapt to the conditions on the school site and based on the numbers. So that's why we didn't want to go too far into, like, spelling out too many details, because again, we think we're going to need to adapt and shift. But I think you're bringing up some really good points that we should definitely consider. And just know that we do have a few extra positions that the board approved in our 21-22 budget with the COVID relief funding, an extra small group instructor for grades 1, 2, and 3 for each grade level. Learning loss mitigation specialist, couple others, Amy would know, or Melissa could tell you the exact names and titles, but there are some additional resources. And as we get a little closer on the planning for how this would be implemented, we definitely will keep a strong eye to what the burden is on teachers. It's one of the reasons why we're not just like wanting to have all students try to zoom into a classroom all day and make it like as normal, quote unquote, as possible, like their school day, because that instructional model is super taxing on teachers. So we may do some variation, small group time, or, you know, maybe very short amount of times to try to help create more relationship connections. But we definitely have an eye to mitigating the negative impact on teachers. And you know, our teachers have been through so much and they have stepped up in such a big way. And so, yeah, we definitely have to be super mindful of any added burden on our teachers. So thank you for bringing that one up.
If I can just add to that, Kevin, real quick. Our leaders came back last Monday and it was just like, how do we get back to school while we were at the leadership, at the directors and chiefs level, trying to figure out what are all these regulations? What exactly do we need to do? Our main teaching staff hasn't come back yet either, right? So they're going to come back to this news. And so we're trying to find the most effective way that we can do this in the simplest way also, because this is a choice for parents to say, I'm going to independent studies. My child is going to independent studies. They're not going back to Navigator's distance learning from last year. And so I think there's a real distinction there.
Oh, you're muted, John.
Thanks, Kevin. Are there any other questions? I hear a motion to approve the short-term independent study policy.
This is JP, so moved.
Thanks, JP. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Final comments, questions? Hearing none, Sean, will you call the roll, please?
Doug Taggs?
Aye.
Tina Corrin?
Aye.
Fia Oman?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Curbelo?
Aye.
Shara Hegde?
Aye.
Victor Paredes Clonia?
Aye.
The motion is approved unanimously.
Thank you, Sean. We'll move to the next item, which is the long-term policy, which we've already talked about. Sharon, there's some additional detail and granularity I know that you want to point out with respect to the developments.
Well, the policy is giving us the permission to craft kind of the best approach to a long-term independent study. So I think we provided you with some additional documents. I'm sorry if there were some formatting issues, so that you could kind of get an idea of what the instructional model would look like. We're going to be talking to principals tomorrow about a few more details around the instructional model. But generally speaking, the policy contains all of the elements that we need to ensure happen for students. So does anyone have any questions about sort of what the difference is between the short-term and the long-term policy and sort of the added requirements that we would need to make sure happen for our students?
I have a question that goes, sort of is related to Dina. Can you clarify for me the sequencing of the short-term, long-term policies, not just for kids with exposure, but generally with respect to developments?
I think what I'm understanding you to say, so what we're doing right now is finding out from parents their interest in long-term independent study. So short-term independent study will come about once school starts and maybe kids get sick or parents, you know, go out on vacation and such things. So that's it. Right. Yeah. So with the long-term right now, we're figuring out how many, you know, students need it. Then we'll meet with those parents. Each parent has an individual meeting. Is that what you mean with the parents?
Well, that is the sort of setting up the long-term policy from, or I'm sorry, the long-term study availability for parents. But if I'm a parent and I say, look, I just want my kid for at least the first 3 weeks to have a independent study. And then I'll, my spouse and I will get together and we'll determine where we want to go from there. Where do those parents go in? Do they go short term? Do they go long term? How are they classified?
Sharon, I'm going to take a shot at this one.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it would be based on their request, John. So we would have to be very clear in explaining what the options are. If they started short-term, they could switch to long-term. If they started long-term, they could they could switch back to being in person. So that's right. Part of the requirement is that the parents aren't locked into their choice. Right. So I think we would give them the clear information like, okay, this is what the first 3 weeks would look like under the short term. This is what it would look like under the long term. One thing that you also made me think, John, when you said, you know, in terms of developments. So if there's developments around like the COVID variant, you know, spiking or something, you know, unforeseen happened, we cannot initiate the independent study based on our concerns about risks on campus. We have to follow the state's guidelines on this. Right. So we can't like switch back to an analogous to the distance learning. That would only be with the state's kind of guidance.
So going the reverse of Dina's tipping point, if there were 30 students who wanted to continue to go to school and the state was holding out on that, we would be teaching those students while the rest were doing a long-term independent study.
Exactly.
I mean, you might also have something of another option that is not mentioned here, right? Like the school may decide to go back to hybrid, and for parents who are insistent that the kids come in person every day for normal school, I mean, I think there's maybe an issue with how much time is on campus and the site-based learning and things like that. But I feel like there's a possibility that you could just change the base model and allow for an exception for the students who want to be in person.
Right. And then go ahead.
Well, one thing I want to say, John, is I think that there are all sorts of weird like situations, which maybe we should not play out like all the, you know, random situations, but right. You know, I can imagine a parent who starts off like, I want to just try the first 3 weeks. If I trust how you guys are doing things, then I'll come. Then they get to the end of the 3 weeks and they're like, well, I want to try another 3 weeks. I'm not totally set yet. And I believe in the short-term policy, I think I read somewhere in the documents you sent that the school has to agree. And if the school doesn't agree to continue the independent study because the student is not following the guidelines, the, you know, amount of work is not being done or whatever, they can deny an independent study, a short-term independent study. I don't know if that's also the case with the long-term independent study.
That's right. That's where I was headed. Parents are going at 3 week in increments and saying, well, okay, so when do you say, well, the long-term independent study program is available to you?
It seems like by default, once they hit day 15, they can't be in anything but long-term at that point.
Okay.
Well, but I think that's the question, right? Because we would extend a normal independent study program, like a normal short-term, you know, pre-COVID, you would have said, okay, we can extend it, right?
Yeah, I think, well, one key distinction here is that the way that we have to provide the instruction, if it goes more than 15 days, is completely different. So we have to do the synchronous, the amount of oversight and compliance, you know, goes up significantly. So we basically have to adjust the program after that 15-day period in order to be compliant with the state. So I don't think there's an option to extend a short term except to shift it into a long term.
Even if it's like 2 more days, 5 more days. I mean, because you don't know in advance it's going to be 15 days.
I mean, I'm not sure how the law, I don't know how, you know, they'll actually interpret it if it were to go to court, but like what's written in the law is 15 days. So, you know, that's what, like, we would be working to abide by that.
Yeah, I guess it's just in the comparison to the short-term normal, which maybe is not a fair comparison in this world, but like, you have to know in advance you're going to be out. You can't say on day 5, I've been out for 5 days, can I do independent study retroactively? So that's where I wonder, like, the 15 days is 15 days of planned absence, not 15 days of actual absence. So I'm not sure that you're forced on day 16 into long-term independent study, because just in the same way as you weren't before, like, you can't go back, like, you don't know how long that's
going to be. That's a good nuance there to dig deeper on. But yeah, I think we would not count days that already passed where there wasn't an agreement. There's very specific, we have to have an agreement for, you know, prior to the student being placed on independent study. So if they were absent for 5 days, that wouldn't be a situation that would factor into what 15 days were counting. So, but I think those are really great nuanced questions that we do need to make sure we're, you know, addressing as we go forward.
Kevin and others, can you help me understand if a student becomes ill in a classroom, what is the impact with respect to attendance on the other students?
The impact of the students on the other students?
Yeah, in other words, if a student becomes ill.
There's an exposure in the classroom. Okay. Amy's our resident expert on this.
Okay. Amy.
Oh, I've been putting on the spot. So if a student in classroom gets COVID and is tested positive, then that class has to go into quarantine for 10 days. And Kirsten, help me out here. If the teacher's been vaccinated, they do not have to quarantine. If they have not been vaccinated, then they do have to quarantine. So a close exposure is 15 minutes in a 24-hour period. So if there's no social distancing, right? So if it is in the classroom, that class does have to quarantine.
And that class quarantining means they stay at home in a quarantine environment? And does that mean they then essentially revert to an independent study process for at least 10 days?
Yes.
Okay. And that's the long-term independent study, or is it the short-term independent study policy? Sharon?
I would guess it would be the short-term. However, yeah, I think it's up. If it's like a large class, I think the teacher might be able to run it as a, you know, similar to with a more detailed instruction, instruction by the teacher, for example.
Terrific. Great. Thank you. Other questions or comments?
I just have to say, this is incredible work that you guys have done. I'm so impressed with the documents that you sent through. It's like makes my head spin. And I appreciate James's comment around like, we are desperately trying to find the simplest way to implement what is a very complex ask of schools. And so I appreciate and strongly encourage, I mean, I don't have to encourage, I know you'll do it anyway, but I feel like that is really just so critical. Just the what is the simplest way to get to like the best program that you can offer given the circumstances. But huge appreciation, Sharon, to you and Sean and everyone who contributed to this, because it's, and James, this is just a really good work.
I agree. It's very proactive.
Yeah. I will confess to maybe violating the standard. My wife, who's a city official up in San Mateo County, is wrestling with these issues on the local government, and by virtue of her experience, some of the state government. And I showed her the documents. I was stupefied by how much work you all have put into this, and how you really stretched. Because I've listened to, I don't want to say public school because we're all public schools, but traditional public school teachers talk about the situations they're facing, and the fidelity and the amount of work is just amazing. And Michelle, who's fairly, well, she should be on this board, not me, but she was just overwhelmed by what you guys have done and accomplished. So yeah, underscoring Dina's comments, well done. And to go back to a question that Kevin made, thank you to the staff. The pandemic fatigue is huge, is an issue of national importance, people are talking about. And for you all to be able and be willing to do this is head shaking. So thank you, principals and staff and administrative folks for being willing to implement this program on the front line. With that, any other questions or comments? Okay, can I hear a motion to approve the long-term policy?
I'll make a motion.
JP, I'll second.
Okay, final comments, questions, any amendments? Hearing none, Sean, will you call the roll, please?
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
Dina Corin?
Aye.
Thea Elman?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Covello?
Aye.
Shara Hegde?
Aye.
Victor Paredes Colonia?
Aye.
The motion has passed unanimously.
Thank you. And thank you to the staff. As I move to closing item section three, thank you again, board members, for being willing to join at short notice for this special meeting. We're fortunate to have you. Unfortunately, we may, the situation as we all agreed in this discussion is fluid. So we have to stand by and be ready to support our staff prior to our scheduled meeting on the 24th. So, but we commit to the staff that we will do that and recommit to the staff that we will do that. Also, one of the things that we intend to do is to have, unless any staff objects, is to have Kevin and myself write a letter to the parents thanking them for their flexibility and their commitment to responding and their kids and that sort of thing, and to sort of take a compassionate view toward the challenges that they're confronted with as parents. Those of us who are parents know that this is just an excruciating time for sending kids to unvaccinated, sending unvaccinated children to a classroom. So we'll do that. I'll circulate that to staff members within the context of the Brown Act, allowing us that, but and we'll continue to work on that. Any final questions or comments?
This is JP. I just want to build on what's already been said. It's just, you know, as a parent of two, you know, students at GPS and in different grade, it's uncanny how, and I won't say it's unbelievable, because since day one with Sharon and James and Kirsten and the group, I've never had an issue with them not being able to come up with some type of solution. Mm. And I've always just, it's amazing. It's like we get taught so many different things and a goalpost change hourly sometimes, and we're like, okay, staff, here's go put another beautiful picture together for us. And now you guys have gotten kicked in the teeth many times and just, you know, so many challenges, and it seems like every time we get a challenge, the bar just gets raised higher and higher. And I mean, just kudos to all the staff that you guys put this together, and as I explained earlier, that it's very concise and clearly understand the goal and the purpose. So anyway, like I said, as a parent, deeply impressed and deeply grateful the amount of thought and work that goes into it. So thank you from a parent standpoint as well.
Thanks, JP. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Second.
Victor seconds.
Great. Sean, call the roll, please.
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
Dina Corin?
Aye.
Thea Elman?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Covello?
Aye.
Shara Hegde?
Aye.
Victor Pretis-Colonia?
Aye.
Motion to adjourn has passed unanimously.
Thank you, Sean. And thank you again, everyone, for your work. Thank you, board members. Hopefully we won't see you until the 24th. And please look at your strategic plans and come with questions and ideas. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. Take care. Good.